welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And they've got everything John Deere that you can possibly imagine right now. They're selling the electric John Deere mowers. Because, you know, in California, you can't run the gas mowers.
You feel like the electric mowers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're starting to sell. So I think people are kind of warming up a little bit. First, it's like, you're not going to force me to buy one. But they're buying them. So it is what it is, folks. So come up and see them.
The grass makes them do it.
Yeah. They've got a great inventory on hand, and they'll walk you through how they work and all that. And or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
So there you go.
Nice. So let's see. Today is April 14th, 2024, in case we re-air this. But our guest today is actually in studio. We're all here, which is kind of fun. So we will have no phone fun. Ben is here. Everybody's here. We'll have no phone drama. Although I think people do. Like I think they listen. It's kind of like why you watch car racing. You know, you sit in turn four because that's where the wrecks are. Yeah, things happen. Things just keep happening. Our guest is Stephanie Bridget. She is the district attorney here in Shasta County, and we thought there are a couple of reasons. Okay, for one, we see the district attorney on, like, every, maybe we just watch a lot of crime shows, but, like, every show, you know, well, the DA, such and such, you know. So we all feel like we kind of know, we know that there is this person, but I don't know that everybody knows what they really do and what type of omnipotent powers you have or not. So we thought that'd be worth having a conversation about. And part of this discussion today will also be about this Prop 47 initiative, repeal initiative that's going around. That's being run by the district attorneys in California. And Prop 47 basically made crime legal again. So that's why we've been on such a joyride. But we'll get into that today as well. So if you don't live in California, I guess you can ignore that part, except for the fact that we are a cautionary tale. So the people in your community might want to have a Safe Schools and Streets Act and make all the crimes misdemeanors, and maybe you could tell them how well that's worked out for us after you hear all this. So let's see. Stephanie is the first woman to serve as the Shasta County District Attorney since the office was established in 1851. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Huh. Wow. I didn't know. She has spent the majority of her professional career as a prosecutor in the Shasta County District Attorney's Office. Began there in 2002. And in March of 2017, she was sworn in as the 32nd District Attorney. It's all we've ever had in that length of time.
Yeah, I know.
God, we have some longevity. Just kind of doing some fast math. It's like, wow, that's not
some longevity and some repeat district attorneys over the years.
So you are term limited by the voters, which is correct. What term limits should be. They should happen at the ballot box.
Yep. Okay. Based on the ballot.
Good call. During her career, she's handled every type of criminal prosecution, from misdemeanor cases to homicides. She's committed to ensuring victims of crime have a voice, and their office fights to make sure justice is served, which, I mean, I would kind of hope this is the mission statement for everybody. I was skimming down. Maybe, how about this?
Sure.
Since you're here in Ohio. So why'd you decide to do that? I'm sure that's probably not in the bio. I'm not going to read for it.
Why I decided for this career path?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's not like I went throughout my childhood or college or law school thinking this is what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to, you know, do something, a professional career and have something that's interesting. When I got out of law school, I actually started with a civil firm in the Bay Area. And I only worked there for about maybe 9 to 10 months. I was doing, class action, civil defense on construction cases. I mean, talk about, it was so boring for me.
I was going to say, that's exciting stuff.
10,000 tons of paperwork and mostly just all research, and you're like, wait, I didn't want to become a contractor?
Right. I started thinking, why did I even become an attorney?
Yeah.
So then I got the position up here, and I came up here and just immediately fell in love with it. So it's really just a product of giving it a shot, thinking that this would be something interesting to go do. And then just like almost immediately, I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do for my entire career. I just love it. I love being able to be in the courtroom. The cases are interesting. Everything about it is just a great profession.
So let's start from the back and go to the front.
Sure.
Okay, so what's the thing nobody knows about the district attorney's office? You're like, oh, if we could just spray it on them, you know, so they would all know. Like, what's the thing that really people don't know, or they think you can do and you can't? That's probably a pretty long list.
Oh, people think we can do a lot of things that we can't, especially in today's kind of culture and day and age, where I've explained it a couple times recently this way. A lot of people like to say that saying, oh, that's criminal. You know, if they get upset about something or, you know, something happens in their life, oh, that's awful. That's criminal. Well, people think like take that literally, that just like all of these woes that occur in our community are actually crimes. And they're not. So that has been probably the bigger hurdle year over year, as kind of we see so much political unrest and a lot of issues happening on the local, state, and national level, that, you know, certain things are criminal and some aren't. But a lot of things that people think should be criminal, they're really civil. They're not. It's not a crime. We deal with, you know, penal code, vehicle code, welfare and institution codes. There's some very specific elements that must be met for something to be criminal. And that is definitely something we see more and more and more, where people think things are criminal, but they're not.
And so the types of things you prosecute as the district attorney, what goes to your office? Because I know a lot of people bring things to your office. Like, here I have this online fraud, or I have this whatever, and they bring them all to your office. I'm sure you have like a public contact desk that has a stack of incoming.
So that's a pretty broad question. I could talk about what our office does, and then I think talking about the process of how a case comes from law enforcement to us is probably the best way to kind of explain that. So the office of the district attorney, there's 58 in the state, Shasta County being one of the 58. It is an elected constitutional position. We have jurisdiction over entire Shasta County and all crimes committed in Shasta County, whether it's in the city of Redding, city of Shasta Lake, or unincorporated areas, or Anderson. And we do have prosecutors, so attorneys that handle the cases. And we have our Bureau of Investigation, so sworn police officers who do primarily follow-up work on our cases. And we have a Crime Victims Assistance Center that works with victims. And I can get into each of those in more detail, but just to answer kind of the question you said, that's the general makeup of the office. We aren't what you would call, you don't call us if your car was broken into, or you don't call us, you know, you call RPD, you call
the police department,
you call those people who are going to go out and respond right then and handle your case. Typically, our investigators are doing follow-up work, preparing cases for trial. They're re-interviewing witnesses, interviewing new witnesses, going out taking pictures and measurements and crime scene diagrams and all of that type of stuff.
So you've got your own investigators that go out and basically do the same thing the police did the first time around.
Yeah, well, we try not to duplicate that, but we try to supplement it when it comes to us with additional things that we need. And that's where that process of how a case goes from law enforcement to us to trial, because when we've got, you know, Reading Police or Sheriff's Office or any number of agencies that send cases to our office, they work on a different standard. The law allows them to make an arrest, submit a case if they believe that by preponderance of the evidence that the crime is committed and this person committed it. Well, when it comes to us, we can't convict a person, certainly not in front of a jury or otherwise, without proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a much higher standard. I mean, it's the highest standard in the land. So a lot of times we're doing a lot of extra follow-up work that a prosecutor may want, like an extra person interviewed, extra pictures done, going out and talking to an expert, whatever it may be, to kind of help get all the evidence we need to go to trial. So our internally, our investigators are doing a lot of that type
of work. Now, are they typically from a law enforcement background, and they move into the DA investigative area? Okay.
Yes, we don't hire right out of the academy. They have to have usually 5 to 10 years of experience in patrol and detectives before they're going to be hired into a DA's office. A lot of times it's around that 10-year mark where we tend
to get. How many investigators do you have?
We've got 2 open positions right now. When those are filled, I believe we've got 14. Mm-hmm. However, only 3 positions are really doing general fund crime, so following up on, you know, homicides, rapes, those types of cases. Because to the other point that Aaron brought up about, like, people who do call us and what can we handle from the beginning, and you, I believe you had mentioned fraud, because fraud is an area where we actually do take cases from the beginning on through. We've got grants where we handle welfare fraud cases, auto fraud cases. We have a consumer protection unit. We've got several different units that are more akin or closer to the fraud and consumer protection, where we do take initial complaints and run and investigate those cases all the way up to and including prosecuting those cases.
So in those cases, there is no police report. You folks take it from the very beginning. You take the initial complaint and run with it from there?
Yeah, our investigators would generate an internal police report and handle the entire investigation internally, okay, and then submit it internally.
Yeah.
So
what kinds of things? Okay, so you don't do civil type stuff.
Well, we do. We have our consumer protection unit. So
hey, yeah, talk about that a little bit, because that's big right now.
Yeah, so our civil protection unit can handle so, for example, when we've had catastrophic wildfires and there's people that are contracting without license and they are trying to price gouge and raise their prices and go in and take advantage of people who maybe had their house burnt down or their fence burnt down, and they're running scams on the community, that is a consumer protection issue that we handle in our unit. Also cases, we are part of a statewide task force for consumer protection with other district attorney's offices. So we'll get complaints into our office. For example, let's just pick any big box store like Macy's, just came to my mind. Let's say that they are running an ad that a person gets 15% off if you buy this lipstick. But when consumers go and they buy it, it's only ringing up as 5% off. But most consumers don't recognize that, right? Because you just see, okay, well, the price went down
a little bit. There was a discount, yeah.
Right. Well, every once in a while, someone is going to notice. They're going to calculate that, and they're going to say, well, wait a minute. This isn't right. You're not giving what you advertised for. Well, that individual person isn't going to stand much of a chance bringing a lawsuit against Macy's.
Yeah, no.
So the statewide consumer protection units work together, and they keep track of all these complaints statewide. And once they start seeing a trend of complaints, we send investigators in to do, you know, shell buys to see if this is happening. And then we bring a case on behalf of the state of California against Macy's,
okay,
against that company.
Right.
And what we are doing is not only bringing to light very publicly, because they're being sued by the DA's office, consumer protection, to stop the behavior. Because first and foremost, that's what we need to do, is stop the behavior so people stop, you know, being scammed.
Getting ripped off, yeah.
That's the number one thing. And bringing that case brings it to light, gets them to stop. We get court-ordered injunctions that make them stop doing it. And then we usually hit them with a civil penalty as well. That civil penalty goes back to those DA offices that brought the case. just to fund those prosecutors' ability to keep bringing those cases. It doesn't go to like general fund or my office to use it for whatever we want. It has to fund an investigator and prosecutor to keep doing that work on behalf of the people of the state of California.
Yeah, well, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, so our unit is very active. We've done a lot of really big cases, and you know, a lot of people don't know we have it.
So we want to hear. We definitely want to hear more about that. And yeah. I've got some, I do want some real examples because I've got a few that people have called and I'm like, huh, I wonder if that's a thing they do. And yeah. I told a few people over the last few weeks, I'm like, hey, we're talking to the district attorney. We're going to ask her all this.
Yeah. Yeah. On our website, you can fill out forms to send those complaints directly into our consumer protection unit and we review those.
I might accidentally do that for you.
Yeah.
we have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
Bet I can drive faster than you can. Come on, hoss, let's have some fun. Go on, shoot me with a radar gun. You look bored and I sure am. Catch me if you can. Hey, hey, Mr. Policeman. I got a 75 fiber Trans Am. With a 455 up under the hood. Me and my brother got a running good. Wake up behind them old Ray-Bans. Catch me if you can. Go on, turn on the blue lights. So pretty.
Think I'm crazy, cause I worry all the time. If you paid attention, you'd be worried too. You better pay attention, or this world you love so much might just kill you. I could be wrong now, but I don't think so. Cause there's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there.
So it is a jungle out there. All right. So
great song.
When you are, when you're working on those kinds of things, like consumer protection type of stuff, what about? Well, go with the ones that are in real life. Like these are things where people would walk in, maybe type of advertising, or like what would be some other?
So product quality sometimes. Let's take, I believe we had something on, I don't know if that one's settled yet, so.
Oh, mum's the word on that
let
one.
Let me think of another one. Let me just think of kind of an example.
Like, does it have to be something where local consumers interacted with them in real life, like in physical life, or could it be they were email scammed or phone scammed?
Oh,
what about all that stuff?
Yeah, no, we definitely can help with that as well. So for example, we've helped with real estate law a lot where people, let's say you're buying a home and you're going to wire money. There's been a lot of scams out there. We'll try to interject and send you an email that looks like it's from your title company that's changing the wiring instructions. Uh-oh. So the money end up getting wired somewhere else. So part of our consumer protection unit does real estate as well. And we're constantly going out and talking to the Realtors Board, the Realtors Association, to inform them of any of these types of scams. Because a lot of times, if we know about it quick enough, it's not necessarily that we're going to be able to maybe find the offender, because a lot of times they're just not even in California.
Or the country.
But there is a certain amount of time where you can get that reversed if you have reported it and it looks like it's fraudulent. And we've been able to successfully do that several times to help people get their money back when they had sent, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars off on these types of scams. So if you are or feel like you have been a victim of fraud on a real estate deal or anything, like reaching out to our office is as quick as you can be very beneficial.
So they don't report that to the police department first? They can go directly to your office? Or
For that, they can go directly to our office. But you can call both.
Okay.
Just to cover your bases, but we're the ones that are going to be working. We have a real estate fraud unit that can work on that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What's your most common thing when it comes to that kind of stuff?
Oh, most common. It really trends on what is the most common. It's just always changing.
Do you have a lot of it in, like, in person, ripping people off in person, or more of it, like, distance, phone, computer, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, most of the people are distant. Yeah. So let's say you see an advertisement on Craigslist for a house for sale or for rent, and you're going to go look at it, but the person's only dealing with you over the phone. Because a lot of times they'll take a legitimate house that's for sale, put it up for rent, and use those same pictures, but advertise on Craigslist and try to get your deposit ahead of time and say that you can move in a week, but then that house was actually listed by someone else for sale or for rent, and that's why it's empty. So there's so many different types of scams like that.
Does that happen often?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That'd be a bummer.
Can you imagine? You go to, you know, okay, great, you're all ready to move in, and then you, like, especially if you were coming from out of the area.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
Yeah, because you're thinking, I'm just renting, like, I don't necessarily have to see it ahead of time. I saw the pictures, although I would never do that, but okay, yeah. I guess people could.
Well, when you're dealing with a tight housing market, which I'm sure they are, you know, you said your show is across the nation. I'm sure that's very common.
In all sorts of places.
Well,
you
the
look
nation.
At, especially if you got a job in another city, maybe another state, and so you're doing your kind of shopping. Okay, so what's the...
Doing it all online.
All online? Yeah. What's your... Yeah. What do you do? Go with a local property management company or a local realtor to like make sure that doesn't happen to you? Like, what's the protection of that?
Someone's got to go and see it in person.
Go with a human?
Yeah.
Oh. We have a cold brewing in here.
Yeah, I was about to sneeze.
We have
a tissue in here.
Yeah, go do that. We'll talk randomly about nothing. Oh, I hate
those
that.
Allergies time of year, you know?
I'm telling you ahead of time. Everybody heard me in the Marge Simpson voice, which I'm always really close to anyway. I'm always just one click above the Marge Simpson voice, but when I'm sick, it's like, rawr, you know, get the hardcore Marge Simpson voice. So, okay, here's one. I had a guy call me. Oh, my gosh, it's been 5 or 6 years ago. He would have been, I think he's 89 now, so he would have been like 84, 85.
Yeah.
And he was contacted by these people, and they told him that if he sent them, this wasn't gift cards, because I get those all the time, too. We should probably tap on that.
Yeah.
But if he sent them a certain amount of money, you know, $1,000, $2,000, something, they would be investing. He wanted to start a tuition-free Christian university.
Oh, yeah.
And, we want to do that, too. Oh, my gosh. That's what we want to do. Well, we'll work with you. You send us that. We'll get you the money.
Yep.
Well, he has sent them, just called me the other day, because I told him, I go, that's not a thing.
No.
Don't do that. That's a terrible idea. They're coming over. I go, I guarantee you they never show up. So when they don't show up and they have a really great excuse, that means they're lying. So here 5 years later, he calls me and he goes, well, I said, so whatever happened with that? They have given them over $300,000.
Yeah.
But the thing is...
It's horrible.
Can you... If they gave it to them...
No.
You can't. It's not a crime.
Well,
it's kind of like giving someone your car and then claiming they stole it, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if a person is still... they're being misrepresenting and they're being fraudulent in what they're doing, their actions can still be fraudulent because they got that under false pretenses. But the problem is catching that person.
Yeah. These people, I'm sure, are nowhere to be found.
They're not in
I told him
California or Shasta County.
I said there's a giant building filled with Nigerian princes who email all of us all the time. Like, everyone knows. I mean, God, remember the era of the Nigerian prince emails?
Yeah.
Nigerian prince wants to share his wealth with you. It's like, no, he doesn't. He really doesn't.
Well, and things are getting worse, too, with artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Because we've all heard of those scams that we've talked about where someone calls grandma acting like the kid.
I'm your grandkid. I'm in jail or whatever.
I'm in jail, yeah. And they're talking really fast and really quick, and so they're trying to hope that grandma can't really tell that it's
like
a different
voice.
Super late
at night or super early in the morning. All the ones I've heard of were always at really weird times when it would catch you.
Right. Well, right now, it's even worse because artificial intelligence can take a kid's online personality. So they're posting videos with themselves talking or whatever it may be, and they can clone their voice and everything and then use the kid's actual voice to call a grandparent, call a parent. And it's a lot easier for them to get away with those types of scams now because they can actually replicate a family member's voice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
By getting their online presence, and they'll know stuff about them. They'll know.
Well, people put a lot of information online. I know you were just in such and such on vacation. Yep. Blah blah blah.
Oh, I know you just got back from Hawaii, but I'm here and I need this and yeah.
Okay, so you got those, and you guys can look in. To that kind of? What do they have to have?
For those types?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those really goes down to, I mean, that's more education. You got to teach people to not fall for that.
Yeah, because you're not going to be able to track all those down.
Yeah, those people are not sitting here in Shasta County.
Right.
Or California, and you're just not going to be able to do it. So
most of them are over. I mean, I'm like this one guy, the guy that I was talking to with the $300,000. I told him, I go, look, there's a giant building, and all the people on the first floor are getting $2 an hour, and their job is to just find out if you're a human. So they're just calling and calling and calling and calling and calling and checking the box. Is a human? That's not a human. Human? No human.
Yeah.
And I go, they have no skill set. As soon as they get a person, that goes to the next floor. That person has a little bit more training, a little more knowledge, and now they kind of pitch you. Well, the pitch either succeeds or fails. Same calling process. Goes to the next floor up. Those people are a little better. I go, you're on the top floor. You're dealing with one of the original scammers, and these guys have been stringing you on for 5 years, and they've gotten all of your money. Do you not see that this isn't real? And he could not see it. Could not see it because he couldn't let go of it.
Yeah.
No, they're going to help me. I'm going to. And then
just,
he went
just
through
one turn from the payoff.
Well, and he went through the. It's like gambling. Yep. It's a weird like addiction. Do you see that very often?
And the person doesn't want to believe that they're a victim.
Right.
That's true. There's that.
Like, oh no, it's going to be true. I'm not going to be. I don't want to be the victim. This is a real thing. I'm going to hold out.
Yeah. Well, he went through a little phase there where he was going to get all the evidence and be able to turn it over.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, this is kind of an expensive evidence gathering program. Maybe you should have someone else do that.
Especially $300,000. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Unbelievable. They lost their home and
it's
everything.
Hard to walk away from that.
No, they lost everything they own. Gave it all to them.
Wow.
What about the gift card thing? I had somebody else, they got a big settlement from, what do you call it? Workers' comp, I guess it was. So they had a chunk of money.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's public record. Probably isn't, but it is, I suppose, if someone in that system is potentially involved with it. Hey, so-and-so just got this payoff. Let's contact them. And that was the gift card scam. Hmm. You know, you go to Walmart, get the gift card, call us with the number and scrape the back off.
Right.
I guess is where the little secret code is.
Where the code is, yeah.
Never done the gift card, but I guess you scrape the back off. And that went on. For $100,000.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and people will get gift cards, and they'll, let's say they get gift cards through benefits that they're getting, welfare benefits on gift cards, and they'll take them to stores, and stores will let them buy, like, something for $10, but the card is for $100, and then give them $50 cash on top of it, and the person working there takes the card and gets to benefit that extra $30 that was on the card. That's a thing that's happens too.
Because they can only give them back so much. I mean, otherwise you could buy a $1 thing and get $99 back.
Yeah.
Why doesn't it just stay on the gift card?
Well, they give it. That's what they're doing. So then the person who works there can get the benefit of the $30 extra when they buy more stuff in the store. So it's really a scam of the person working there.
Oh.
There's all kinds of things.
You guys deal with those too, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
That seems like an easy one.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I got a publisher's clearinghouse call the other day. They're still out there.
Telling you won?
Uh-huh.
That's still around. That's been.
Except you forgot to enter. Well, this stuff used to be.
I believe it when they show up with the balloons on my porch.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're on the commercial.
Yeah.
Well, that used to always be in the mail. The mail was the physical mail. They would send you these things. Then it kind of moved to email, phone has always been a thing.
Yeah.
But
texting, social media, messenger apps, all of that. You're getting it on everything.
It's coming from every angle now. So,
and it's going after teens in a big way now, too. Because all the teens have their cell phones.
Sure. Is the level of data that people are sharing, I mean, okay, this is my, you know, my opinion on it is the more you share, the more vulnerable you are.
Oh, for sure.
Does that pan out?
Oh, for sure. And that's a big thing with our younger generation that all have cell phones and all have messenger apps and all have texting. They're starting to get the same text messages, the same fraudulent activity coming into them that they didn't used to get when they didn't have cell phones and when social media and all the online scams weren't such a big deal. Now they are. So they're targeting, they might be getting a lower dollar amount from a teen, but if they can get it from, 100 teens, that's going to be quite profitable.
Sure, it's a volume business.
Yeah.
They're not looking for one big score, right? They're mm-hmm. they're looking to hit everybody.
Yeah, stuff like very popular video games, they'll target that with, hey, enter this contest. It's only going to cost you $10, but you're going to get, the best avatar that you need to play on that game. They'll do it. They'll send in that money. But then they're not going to get anything back. I mean, right. That hits the teens, the online, all the time. Mm. I mean, it's very prevalent. Or with financial aid, like fake financial aid companies trying to.
Well, they had a whole big. Didn't they have a thing about that recently?
Yeah, especially this time of year with the loans. It's like if you pay this $80 application fee, you're for sure going to get this amount of scholarship, and the scholarship is going to range from anywhere to $2,000 to $10,000, but all you have to pay is the $80 fee to get entered into it, and then they'll teens or even, the parents will apply for that.
Right.
And then, oh, congratulations, you got it. Now we just need your processing fee of $30 and give us your account to transfer it to. And then, they're picking away at the amount of money.
A little bit more.
And just people just need to know. The biggest thing is if someone's reaching out to you, it's most likely not legitimate.
Yeah.
It just isn't.
Oh,
and if
okay.
it's legitimate, you should be able to not click on that link or not make that phone call. You should be able to get off of that, go do your own independent research for that company name.
Yeah.
And then call them through a back door area and say, hey, is this legitimate? Oh, yes, it is. And talk to them for real. Don't click on the link. Even if it says it looks like it's from your bank saying you were, mm-hmm. it looks like you were fraud
this
amount of money.
You need to change your password.
Yeah,
right?
Whatever it may be. Don't fall for that and click on that link or call that phone number that they list in there. You go get your own phone number for your bank, call your bank yourself and say, hey, I just got this text. Did you guys send it? Here's what it is. And I had one of those sent to me a couple months ago,
mm-hmm.
called my bank instead. And they're, nope, that's not, we never sent that. That's not accurate.
Yeah.
So that is the biggest way that people can keep themselves safe is to not click on, open, fall for that stuff. Do your own independent research.
And if it's asking for sensitive information, that's the red flag moment, the big red flag moment, like the password thing. Like whenever they send me a password, your password has to be changed.
Yeah.
Like I'll go back to whatever it is, website, and then click on that, log in, and change my password from there.
Yeah.
Rather than use their link.
Yeah, they call those phishing emails. They go in and they try to get information
with a PH,
from you.
Like with Price Pfister.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
I learned about that with the faucets. All right, we have to take a really quick break. Then we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Could be dumb dead, sleeping in an alley, didn't matter to me. I got lost walking in the valley. Well, it could have been 1993 when it goes badly.
left it burning so bright. Trying to make sense of a hopeless situation, feels like dying in the middle of the night. When it goes badly, you're alone in the darkness. Nothing's ever, ever make it right.
That, by the way, is the sheriff on Yellowstone singing that song.
That's right.
Oddly enough. Okay, so you have an example of a real one that's like rolling through right now.
Yeah, so we recently had a local youth who was scammed out of about $20,000 on a Bitcoin ATM type scam. So Bitcoin, obviously, cryptocurrency, I'd say probably most people are probably aware of at least what Bitcoin is nowadays. But what it is that a person who's a scammer, a fraudster, they are impersonating a government agent or law enforcement, and they'll call you on the phone and notify you that that a scammer has access to your bank account, and that they have all of your personal information, that you're one of the identified victims, and that the scammers are in the process of emptying bank accounts of all the people on this list that they have identified, and that they need to move all of their money right now, and that the government has a secured cryptocurrency wallet that they can transfer that to.
Oh.
We'll send you the QR code for that, and you just need to transfer it all into Bitcoin on this QR code. We're going to hold it in the secure wallet while we finish this case, and then we can transfer it back to you. And they call. They're very convincing. They're putting themselves out there as law enforcement, part of the government, and people are falling for it.
Do you call them is there a phone number to call, or is this all online?
They're calling on the phone. And then they're asking them to, hey, we need to send you this QR code to your phone, you know, because it's typically calling your cell phone.
Yeah.
And then you can do all of it right there. You just scan that, transfer your money into that, and we'll hold it in this government secure wallet, and it'll come back to you after you're able to open up a new account so that they can't have access to it.
Mm.
We just had someone recently that happened to, unfortunately.
Wow.
So that call's coming around. You get that call. It's not real. It's a fake call.
Right, right.
And so on that one, who are they calling from? The FBI, FPPC office,
yeah,
or some other made-up thing?
Yeah. It's a big variety of them. Any type of law enforcement or government official.
They just string the acronyms together and go, yep, it's real.
Yep. Yep.
Yep, that's who we are. And of course you can't call them because most of those agencies you can't reach.
Yep.
And like if it's a fake one like that, they don't have a phone number because they're not real.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's another one to be aware of. But it just kind of, it really goes back to,
if they brought that to you guys, okay, let's say they didn't do anything with it, right? And so someone got that call and went, I don't know if this is real or not. Can you find out if it's real for them? Is that something you guys would do?
We can definitely research that, the number it's coming from, and have ways to find out. Yes, that's been reported already as a fraudulent phone number that's coming from. So definitely report those.
Okay.
Report any of that type of stuff. So
I used to watch a lot of scammer content, like people who would go after the scammers.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, if you're getting a call like that, if you just go to your bank and they start getting scared or telling you not to say exactly who they are to the bank, then you know they're fake. But definitely, if you're ever going to do anything with a caller on the phone, go to the bank and ask your banker, because the bank's not going to go along with it if it's fake. And if they do, then you have somebody to pounce on if they mislead you as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I had somebody who the scammers reached out to them on their computer, so a big thing came up and said it was a thing, and then the phone rang, and they said, we're the people who sent you that because you have scammers trying to steal your money out of our retirement account. But then partway through that call, there were these calls coming in. She's like, somebody keeps trying to call me. I have to go. No, that's the scammers. They're trying to get to you. The scammers are trying to get you. And this was, she was getting called by some people who watch the scammers, who follow them, and they were trying to warn her.
Yeah.
So they called the police department in her town, and the police came and knocked on her door, and they said, leave your phone inside. Come outside. And, I mean, it takes a lot to shut these guys down. They're really good.
Yeah.
They get pretty sophisticated.
Yeah, a lot of the time, if you just go to your bank and first ask them, without, because what they try to do is they actually want you to go to the bank sometimes to pull money out.
Oh, yeah.
And what you're, they'll tell you when they're that specific to not mention that they're on the phone, and they'll say, "Get, you're getting this for your grandkids," right? If you just go to the bank and tell them exactly what it is, then you'll know if it's real or not.
Yeah, and the cryptocurrency one, they'd probably have to like bring that to you, right? Because where are they going to go for that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, any of these types of scams definitely report to us. Because, like I said, it's going to be hard to catch the person. Not impossible. There have been fraudsters that we've caught over the years. But vast majority of the time is when we get these, we're going to put out like a PSA on our social media letting people know, hey, people are starting,
this is going around.
People are starting to get this call. Don't fall for it. We're also out. We go and we talk to, you know, any number of local agencies. So if you have a group out there, whether it's from a Rotary, a church group, a school, whatever it may be, that you want some training on this type of fraud or a variety of topics, we go out and we do that. We try to educate the community about what's going on in the community. We go into schools and talk about like cyberbullying, human trafficking, a lot of that type of stuff. We go to, you know, senior citizens' homes, real estate board, rotaries, all of those talking about different types of frauds that are out there. Because a big part is that we need to stop people from being a victim in the first place. Whether it's this online fraud type stuff or even here in our own community being a victim, we can't always catch everybody in our own community. And the laws of California have been watered down significantly over the last 15 years. So I really believe and have made it a point through the office to do a lot of proactive education to help people not become a victim in the first place. Because that's
yeah, sure,
ultimately what we want. If you're not a victim, then it's a win-win for everybody.
Solves all the problems. So tell me this. So if you are a person out there who falls for whatever this is, you know, the I'll help you build your lifelong dream of a university or whatever, and you continue to give them money, let's say you find out who they are, and they're never going to deliver, but this person gave them the money without being, I mean, they didn't tell them they were going to come burn their house down, or they had, you know, they had their dog at knife point. Can you still prosecute them for that?
I mean, I see the point that you're making.
Because they gave it to them.
It's hard. I can only say that it's always going to be hard for me to answer that question.
Yeah, it's got to be all the stuff.
Yeah. You would really have to have like kind of all the facts and how it all fell out, because most of the time in people who are victim of fraud, they are willingly giving their money, but they're doing it because of false pretenses.
Right.
So,
right,
you know, at what point does it go from, okay, they knew and maybe they're just, you know, it's civil and they got to just go after their money that way. That is so dependent on the facts of every single case.
Okay.
I couldn't really answer that.
No, that is the answer though.
Yeah.
The answer is it is the detail that matters. Yeah. But the idea, I mean, anymore with the sophistication of all this, the idea that as consumers, we're going to gather enough information to be able to go after them, we're not going to have that. Like, they're not going to slip up and give us...
Yeah, they're not going to tell us where they're at.
Yeah, they're not. That's not happening. No. So continuing to play the game so that you can get the evidence on them for the first amount of money they ripped off from you, we'll just give them a little more so we can catch them.
Yeah,
bad plan, right?
No, that's not a good plan.
Yeah, okay.
I do not advise that plan.
Okay, good. I've not advised that plan
before.
That's
an expensive plan.
I was like, yeah, that's going to cost you. I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, that's going to cost a lot of money.
Uh-huh. So, and then you were saying you wanted to move into whatever it was that I already forgot because it was 5 minutes ago. You're the person who's sick, and I can't remember anything. What the hell? Can I say hell?
Well, I guess one of the things we had talked about is wanting to talk about kind of how the law has changed in California.
And
we're really seeing that. So the way California goes, we see that start happening in other states too. So people can really learn.
They start drinking our Kool-Aid and then pretty soon.
Yeah, they can learn from California's mistakes on what to not vote for and what to not support in other states, to just kind of tie your viewership in to the national level. Because California, you know, I started in this back in 2002, and is a very different landscape than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I started in misdemeanors. I was there for a couple of years, and then I went up to felonies. And once you get into felonies, the options were really, if a person committed a crime, a felony, and they were convicted, they could get probation. They could get a couple, some amount of time under a year local jail and with probation, because probation usually came with some type of a local jail sentence, or they go to state prison. Those were the options. And it was a pretty simple system. There's lots of enhancements and lots of things that we dealt with. But it was a pretty simple, straightforward system. We could easily advise victims of crimes. There was a lot of understanding and truth in sentencing for victims of crime. And things have really changed since then. If you compare the way things are now to back then, it's almost like turned it on its head on everything that's happened. And it really just started back in 2011 with what was a legislation. So this wasn't a proposition. It wasn't voted on by people, but certainly voted on by people we voted into office. And that was AB 109. And what AB 109 did is it took over 500 classes of crime, of felony crimes, and said, okay, we're going to go away from that simple system of a person can get probation or go to prison. We're going to say, okay, now there's this third area, and these 500 plus crimes can never go to state prison.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Doesn't matter how many times they offend. And that would be the classic example I like to talk about is car theft, vehicle theft.
Ugh.
So a person could come and steal your car and your car, and my car, his car, and 10 other people's car over 30 days, and they could have a record of stealing cars. And their total exposure from all of these crimes that they've committed could be 30, 40 years. But after AB 109, they're going to spend that time in our local jail.
Oh, they still get time, but it's done locally.
It's done locally.
I wonder why it's full.
So that's it. That's exactly it. We start saying, well, the revolving door at the jail, why don't they keep anybody? Well, because our jails that were built as short-term custodial institutions to hold people on, a year or less or pending trial are now becoming pseudo state prisons. They are have people in them who are serving long sentences. There was someone, I think it was around a 12 or 15 year sentence. I was talking to the sheriff the other day that they have serving in there, and they have people serving 7 year sentences or 20 year sentences. And they're just taking up our seats.
But isn't the local jail supposed to be, was it ever a time frame, or was it the caliber of the crime? What kept you in local jail versus?
So local jail would be, so misdemeanors can only serve their time in local jail, and that's 1 year or less. And then local jail was also where anyone would be while they're pending their trial.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so if it was a felony, once they were sentenced, they could go to state prison. They wouldn't get a 10-year sentence and do it in local jail. That was just not the way our jails were ever designed. That's not the way the system was designed. But AB 109 changed that. And they changed that because of all the lawsuits of the prisons overcrowding, and
right,
we've got to empty the prisons, and let's do this. Let's just take away all these crimes and say they can never go to state prison. So now we see these people who are these repeat offenders out there that are just victimizing our community, stealing their cars, doing all these types of crimes. And they're not the ones that are, raping people or shooting people, because they can. Those classes of crime can still go to state prison. But the more everyday felonies, like the car theft, that is really hurting our citizens on a large scale, those are, it's a revolving door. Those people don't spend a fraction of time in jail that they should have because of AB 109. It's frustrating because the way to solve that problem of prison overcrowding was not to just let a bunch of people go.
Right.
I mean, it's since humanity has existed, there's been criminals, and there's had to be ways to deal with criminals, and you have to have some type of a system in place. And as your population grows, it's doesn't make any sense to think that you can keep the same amount of penal institutions and just keep cramming more people into those because you don't want to build another prison. I mean, once you're
And then you want to close them.
Yeah, your population keeps growing. You needed to build another prison, and you know, not everybody deserves to be in prison, and there's ways that stuff can be reformed around that. But the answer is not to just release everybody, because now our communities are suffering.
Now we've got them all back on the street, and we have to go through the whole process again.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and property crime kind of just makes people a little bit on the crazy side. We have to take a quick break here for the news and you know, some other stuff. Stuff, private stuff, secret stuff we're going to do. Yeah, we got a lot of secret stuff. And then we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.